Welcome to Fembolden, episode 9. I'm Kirsten Pope.
And I'm Stephanie Graff. And just as we promised, we have Joe with us again in the studio. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, thank you.
So, like we said in the end of our last episode, we loved having Joe here and getting a male perspective, and I'm sure you loved hearing voices other than our own as well. So, today we are doing Men's World Part 2. So, if you listened a couple weeks back to our episode on motherhood and careers and just the mommy kind of versus career track, we wanted to reference that a little bit and get a men's perspective on that. Because obviously for us, we just sat here and it was woman power and it was you do you, boo. Like, if you want a career, do a career. If you want kids, do kids. If you want to do both, do both. Like, you do what you want. I guess maybe just like setting a precedent, like to just be as candid as possible. What are your thoughts on that personally?
Personally?
Yeah, personally.
Just me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
That's easy. I feel the same way you guys do. Whatever you want to do in your relationship that makes sense to you. I'm engaged right now, and I think it'd be great if she wants to focus on a career. I think it's great if she wants to have children. Part of that is a little bit different for us because there's a pretty decent age gap. And so when I think about delaying children for a long, long time, there is some logistic considerations
that
to be made.
That is interesting.
Right.
Health concerns and energy levels and that kind of thing. But outside of that, I think it's great. I think whatever will make her happy will help to make me happy. And, you know, I don't think I have a very traditional view on that.
Especially, I think, for around here. I think around here it's very common for there to almost be just the expectation that, like, you will stay home.
Yeah. Now, I will say that when, hopefully, we're planning on having children. So if when we have children, my goal is to make it so that she doesn't have to work. I don't want to pigeonhole us, send her as a requirement out of the home to work. I think that just knowing our personalities and strengths and weaknesses, she would be better at being at home with kids than I would. I think she would do a better job with it. And I think that some of that, I hesitate to use the term universal, but just in general, I've known more women who I thought would be better in that role than I've known men. And I think that that's part of where the tradition and the classic thought came from originally. But if I felt like I would do a better job and that she wanted to go work, then I'd be happy with that. I'm happy either way, to be honest.
And I think you touched on a good point. Like, it really just depends. I like when you said it based on your personalities and just, like, your disposition. Because that
personal approach.
Yeah. And, like, whether or not those traits fall more often universally on the men or women side, I think that's what really needs to be considered. Who's more, like, well-suited for that? Like, maybe neither person in the relationship is particularly well-suited to be a full-time parent, and that's fine, too. Oh, like, do you want to stay home with kids? Like, I can tell from your personality that you really like kids and you really want to be be home a lot. Or
and that takes the gender expectation out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're,
more personal.
You're right. Maybe women just generally, like, more women are better than that, which...
Right. And I'm sure from an LDS perspective, that informs it a lot.
Yeah.
But because of that LDS perspective that women are, and we've talked about this before as well, quote unquote, nurturing more than men are.
Yeah.
It's implied that women should always be the mother at home, even though, as we all have come to the consensus here, that's not always the case.
I mean, I remember maybe like a year ago, me and a guy in my ward, we were teaching a joint Sunday school class. And the topic we were assigned was gender roles.
Wow.
I know. So
it's a juicy topic for Sunday school.
I know. So
you started a podcast.
So then I started a podcast. No. So I know not everyone who listens to our podcast are members of the LDS church.
Right.
But we were leaders of respective a men's organization and a women's organization in the church. And so when I say we were teaching Sunday school, we were teaching the entire congregation this week in church.
Yeah, both men and women together in a classroom setting.
Yeah, but very large. I mean, like 100 people were there. And it was so hard because this sweet guy I was teaching with, like, he wanted to teach it very by the book, which the book being, like, provider versus nurturer. And so he starts out the lesson, and he's like, he just literally writes men on the board and underlines it. Women on the board and underlines it. And he's like, okay, let's give traits of men and women. And I remember sitting there just like, hate, 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 double hate.
Wow.
Hate this.
Boo. Get out.
And so, sure enough, like, I knew this would happen. Like, a few minutes into the lesson, like, some nice guy raises his hand and he's like, nurturing. And, like, someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, I think just, more, like you said, more often women are generally holistically maybe a little bit, I don't know if I want to use the word nurturing, but maybe a little bit more aware of others
right.
than men.
Right. But I think the problem with labeling women as the nurturers, it devalues the role of fatherhood and makes fatherhood seem optional and a part-time job and less important. Like, men are less disposed to be fathers. And even doctrinally in the LDS faith, that is not true.
Yeah.
Like, they're both full-time.
Motherhood and fatherhood are full-time jobs.
Yeah. Despite if you are working full-time in addition to that.
Exactly.
Not all women are meant to be mothers.
Right.
Personality-wise, are just not meant to have kids, but I think there's a lot of pressure, like you said, and Kat brought this up when she was in the booth with us. There's a lot of pressure that it's like, what's wrong with me? Like, why don't I have these innate traits that people say I should have? And it kind of gives an identity crisis. Bringing it more to the men's side. Do you have anything, like any male traits, maybe equal to this nurturing thing that you feel like are kind of imposed upon you a lot of time that you might not identify with?
As far as a family fatherhood role?
Yeah, like in the home.
I have a two-part answer to that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start with part two. That is, I don't care. So one of the things that I was thinking when I was listening to that episode of the podcast was that it's really bad form for somebody to impose their own idea of how a family structure should be organized onto somebody else's family. It's a bad move. But on the other hand, I don't care. I mean, if this guy thinks I should be a different type of dad, that doesn't really bother me. I don't think I fit certain parts of the stereotype in that I don't think I'm really a disciplinarian when I'm babysitting kids or hanging out with my nieces and nephews, and they do something silly off the wall, really messy, you know, typical, super playful kid stuff. I think it's great. I love it. I want to dump the flower out too. And I want to, you know, I think it's fun. I mean, I don't know because I'm not a father, but my assumption would be that I won't be a super strict disciplinarian. And that's a role that traditionally has been identified with the father in the family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what about like pre-marriage, but I might as well just say dating and relationships.
Yeah, that's a weird way to say,
pre-marriage relationship.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, that was weird. Same question I just asked, but like, what about like outside of like marriage and family? What about just like in dating relationships? Like, do you feel like there are any like stereotypes that men are encouraged to have in dating and relationships that you don't necessarily agree with, or maybe you do?
I do, and I think the ones that are highlighted mostly in my mind are the ones that I don't think I fit in. Because the ones that I do think apply to me, I just don't really think about very much. But I remember, especially in younger dating, and especially in LDS culture, there's this idea that the more spontaneous and creative you are with the way in which you're asked to
meet
out.
Oh my gosh. save us.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. Let's eat spaghetti with spatulas instead of forks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So here's the thing.
But you're right that the burden does fall on you to
exactly.
think of that.
Yeah, I felt so much pressure to do that. And there are still remnants
horrible.
Of it now. So I guess I'll be a little bit revealing here. My fiance's birthday just passed. And man, I felt so much pressure to make it the biggest day in the world.
Yeah, you're right.
And I failed miserably. And it was tough. I mean, I want to show her that she's important to me.
Yeah.
But that way of doing it is so foreign to me. That's not how I feel it.
Yeah.
And so that's not how I communicate it, necessarily. Early on in dating, there was definitely that aspect of things. I'm glad that you guys kind of groaned when I was introducing that topic.
We will totally validate you.
Thank
all
you.
The time.
I just, that's,
thank you.
Yeah.
But there are girls and women who love that. And there are guys
true.
Who love getting up for the
occasion.
It's, again, one of those individualized things that we've stereotyped to a whole gender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you think a lot of that pressure comes from you personally? Do you think a lot of that comes from you internally, or maybe from men or from women or from just, like, general culture?
So that's a good question. I grew up in Southern California, and I am LDS, and the LDS subculture there has different aspects that take on a more prominent role.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of a thing there, but not quite as much. And it wasn't until I got here, which was later in college age, and there was still some of that stuff there when I got here to Utah. I guess the answer for that to that question is it's kind of a mix. I definitely felt it from outside, and I thought if I don't do these kinds of things, this girl is going to think I'm not interested or that I'm not valuable or don't have things to offer. And when I decided that I didn't care about that stuff anymore, mm-hmm. and that I was just going to go about it the way I wanted to go about it, I think I decided that I couldn't keep up a charade forever.
Yeah. And especially when you're building a relationship, because that just removes the authenticity that you're trying to
And you don't want to feel like, and this is just my personal take on it, I don't want to feel like a guy has this responsibility to entertain me.
Right. Yeah. And I think that makes me feel like condescended or just like this plaything that they're trying to.
Yeah, like you don't need to entertain me. We could have an adult conversation and that's entertaining.
That's fine.
So then once I made that realization and I just approached it from the way I wanted to approach it, it was actually a lot easier if the girl didn't seem interested, because then I thought, well, it's good that I'm showing her what I really am, because if it's not going to work, I'd rather know now and I can just move on. And it was weird. It was kind of backwards of how I assumed, but rejection at that point for dating didn't feel like I failed in this big effort that I was making.
Yeah, it just, some performance.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't feel like I got booed off the stage. It just felt like she wasn't into my style. That was too mainstream for her or something.
This was a pretty controversial topic when we discussed this on our dating and relationships episode, but I wanted to know, and this is kind of related to what we just talked about, but like what your thoughts are on the concept of chivalry and what your take on it is. Because me and Steph have different...
We disagreed.
Yeah, we do.
So that's... Yeah.
Do you think that falls into one of those performance categories or is it different?
That's a good question. I think that varies from individual to individual. Yeah, that's a tough one. I view that... I have this category of thinking of certain traits as kind of built-in filters. So if I feel like chivalrous behavior is what I should do, and I sincerely think that that's showing respect and courtesy, then I should do it. And then if you don't like it, then maybe we're not a good match. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of helps filter that out.
Do you ever feel like you or like guys you know feel like chivalry is kind of like, how did we say before, like doing something creative or like kind of putting on the show for like a girl?
Performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than just like being genuine.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Like this requirement that you have to fill regardless of, like we said, your personal preferences.
Yeah, I do. And I hear stories about guys who do big elaborate things for their significant other. And I don't mean to say that you shouldn't take care of the person that you care about, but I don't know, things like I had a roommate who would get up at 6 every morning and go write a note and stick it under his girlfriend's windshield wiper on her car
every day.
Oh my gosh.
But it was because he thought that she was a little bit emotionally unstable and would have a bad day if he didn't like speak, you know, calming words to her throughout the day.
Wow.
Now I don't... Obviously, there's way more to that story than I know and understand.
Right.
But my initial reaction to that is that that's not the approach I would take.
That's not for me.
That's not for me. Mm-hmm.
And not what I want and whoever I'm dating.
Now, if he's doing that because he genuinely feels like that's a good approach, and if she genuinely feels like that's a good approach, then hey, that
works for
them. Yeah, because I think the difference there for me is like the knight in shining armor complex versus the genuine servant.
Like she might not be
right.
Yeah.
And again, we don't know where he was coming from.
Right.
But that to me is where chivalry kind of falls into.
Yes, of what you the expectations versus, like you said, being genuine. Mm-hmm. Again, getting personally
irrelevant. Yeah, keep it coming.
So I got engaged this week.
Congratulations.
Hooray.
Yay.
Okay, that's all I had to say, obviously. I just wanted validation.
There it is.
Episode's over. We found a woke man.
Woke. But so the only things I said, like, when we were talking about, like, the actual proposal is I was like, I don't want anyone popping out of bushes with cameras. Like, this is the most intimate moment of my life up to this point.
Good.
And please don't feel the need to throw rose petals on the ground. I don't know why people think that automatically. Like, no offense to people who are into rose petals, but I'm like, that doesn't make me feel, like, more romantic when there's petals on the ground. So basically, like I said, you don't need to do something that's not inherently us.
There you go.
Like, don't do something that's just not us. That's, which, I mean, granted, that's some people's vibe, and that's fine. But I was like, don't do anything like that, like candles and all your roommates and their families and their extended families popping out of a bush with, like, DSLR cameras and just be normal. And so... when, I mean, I had a lot of people ask me this week, like, oh, tell me your proposal story.
Yeah.
So I tell them the proposal story, which I think is great. Like, we were just, like, at our classic spot, like, that we go to all the time. And, like, he got down on one knee and asked me to marry him. It was
Inherently
actually
you.
Yeah, it was so, it could not have been more us, but.
But did people think it was boring?
Yes. Or boring isn't the word they use. I think I had a couple people. I had a couple people tell me.
Anticlimactic.
That's what people That's what people told me. I had a couple people this week say, "Wow, that's anticlimactic," and I'm like, "Cause there were no petals on the ground because my Aunt Debbie didn't pop out
like skywrite." Because
it's not
marry
a script
me.
From a movie.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because he didn't like write it out on a plane like in the sky.
Yeah, because it's personal as opposed to fulfilling the society's like competition that like I have to
one. And this is literally society, these people telling me, oh, he didn't spell out your future children's names with his blood on the ground? Like, what
does
he
even
thinking?
Love you?
Wow, you guys must not be in love. But like that, I think it was very interesting. I remember talking to my like my mom and dad about how they got engaged, talked to my aunt and uncles and things like that. That was very much not a thing.
Oh, really?
When my parents like
interesting.
Yeah, like when my parents decided to get married, my dad, she's like, "Oh yeah, when I think your dad just, you know, asked me to marry him."
Huh.
And like I've talked to a lot of people, not a lot of people, but people related to me of that kind of generation, and they're like, "How did he propose? Like he asked me to marry him." And there were no rose petals or people popping out of bushes or, but I think it's very interesting that that's something our generation has come to expect are those very public displays of love.
And I think it goes back to that thing of performances that I'm just trying to perform. And that's a measure of our commitment when we know that it's not.
Or even like a measure of how good of a boyfriend you are or fiance you are.
What they're contributing to the relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I'm like, actually, no, like, he actually contributes. We relate mentally, emotionally, spiritually, like,
things that are.
Yeah, I don't need rose petals, for heaven's sakes.
Substantial, yeah.
Yes. And, but, like, I think people see that as, oh, like, how much does a guy love you? And I don't know if that's, like, the rise of the social media age, but, like.
I definitely think it contributes it. Yeah.
Totally agree.
Kind of, I mean, like the guy popping out of the bushes with the camera. Yeah. Like, I see engagement
Everybody
pictures all the
that.
Time of these perfectly
poised,
exactly.
engagements.
Exactly.
But like, my parents don't have that. None of our parents have pictures of when they got engaged.
It's not
but if that's your deal,
and
if that's
into
inherently
that,
you too, fantastic.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
But I think it does put a lot of pressure on men. And that's like, I think.
Right. And that's what it comes down to is this pressure that you feel to do all these things that.
That almost. They just might, I mean, do they just make you feel exhausting? Like
they did.
Never mind expensive and everything else that goes along with that.
Oh, God, I get that.
That's so cleansing for all of us to release that.
Yeah.
Yes.
That does remind me of an experience I had. So, again, I think as long as you're genuine, then it's hard to go wrong. I think I am a little bit more inherently like that than a lot of people are.
Yeah.
I feel some sense of responsibility. If I can do something that other people can't do, I'm not saying that a girl can't open her own car door or anything like that, but...
Thank you.
Yeah, you can open the car door. I'm fine. You know, I understand you're capable. I do have something like that, and it reminded me of a time I worked in a bank, and there was a teller there who I thought was really nice. She was cute. We were friends. I don't know why I said she's cute. That's not really relevant to where I'm going. Anyway, she was. So, she was kind of small and skinny, and she got pregnant. And I don't know if this would be common knowledge, but sometimes in a bank, you're hauling around large trays with coins and stuff, and they get heavy. And so when she was like 8 months pregnant, she's struggling with this thing. So I'd help her carry it to the vault for her, just because it was an easier struggle for me than it was for her. So I was doing.
Right.
And it kind of started to elicit this, I don't know, this perspective in me, so that one day after the bank closes, the doors are locked and not everyone inside has a key. But when somebody finishes and they're ready to go home for the day, somebody goes to the door, unlocks it, lets them out, locks the door behind them. So I was doing that. She was leaving. And as she's leaving, she walked past me and I just kind of put my hand on her back and I was like, "Okay, Kristen, see you later. Love you." And she stops. We weren't like that at all. We were coworkers. I mean,
like not best friends at all.
Not I love you levels. I don't know.
Wait, it just like slipped out?
Yeah, it just slipped out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like maybe you would.
Never mind, I don't actually love you. No, yeah, I don't.
Exactly. Like talking to somebody on the phone when you don't mean to say it or something.
Yeah, right.
And she just kind of gave me this weird look and said, okay. And she just kind of walked off. Then a couple days later, similar situation, I was letting her out. And I said, okay, bye. And she said bye, and she looked over her shoulder and said, love you, and then walked away. So luckily it was okay. But I thought it was weird that my behavior kind of reinforced and generated emotions that weren't necessarily there.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that's manufactured, though. I mean, I don't know how to.
What do you think?
I mean, my mom, Carol, would always tell me growing up that the best way to build love for someone and show love for someone is service. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a natural consequence of that. Mm-hmm. Although, obviously, it was manifested in something that was, like, totally
service, not words of ask.
Right. So there is that, but that's interesting though to analyze that from a
that is really interesting.
Yeah, I don't know which was the cause and which was the effect. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
There's probably overlap both ways there, but
it's a funny story though.
Yeah, I know that is funny.
I'd like to clarify why I said she was cute.
Okay.
There's a little bit of a backstory. It's a tangent. I'll be fast. Weeks before she started working at the bank, I was at the mall and she worked at the ice cream store. My friends were like, "Hey, that girl's cute. Go get her phone number." So I was like, "Okay." So I went over and was talking to her. Try to get her phone number, and she said, I have a boyfriend. And I, not in a way that reveals my genuine personality, but as a way to deal with the rejection, said, so what? As in, I don't care, give me your phone number anyway.
You were young.
I don't feel that way.
You were young.
In fact, she said, if you had a girlfriend, would you want her to give her phone number out to guys at the mall?
Oh, what she got you good.
She did get me good.
Wow.
So I turned around and walked away. And
so then, did
like,
she recognize
3 weeks
you?
Later, yeah, 3 weeks later,
my gosh.
I walk into the bank and they're like, Joe, meet our newest teller. You're going to train her. Her name's Kristen.
Whoa.
And I looked up and she just had the biggest smile. And she thought it was hilarious.
That's okay.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
That's funny.
That really adds another layer of richness to the story.
Thank you. Yeah.
Woo!
That's anyway.
Yikes. Well, okay. That actually is a very good segue into our final topic of the podcast today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Male relationships with the feminist movement.
Right.
Yeah.
So, obviously, in that particular instance, you just maybe not so much in touch with the feminist movement.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, the mall experience, not the other one.
Yeah.
So kind of like I talked about in the last episode, like that guy who trying to like be nice to me was like, no, you're not a feminist. Do you think, and this is being universal, not your personal opinion.
Let me switch gears then.
Right.
Put your...
My man hat.
Put your every man in the world
my
hat.
My half of the species. Got it.
Yeah. Do you think men have negative connotations with the word feminism?
Yes. No question. Yeah. For a couple different reasons. One is because, well, like any organization, the loudest members or the most extreme members are the ones that get the most attention and that stick out in people's minds. And so for people who, and this relates back to the less informed you are, the more extreme your stance tends to be.
Mm-hmm.
For people who haven't taken time to try to understand feminism, at least mass, how it's viewed by the masses, it just seems really pro-women and anti-men. It just, but I think there's a deeper issue, and I don't remember if we talked about this last episode or not, but it was touched on in the documentary that we talked about. And it's the idea that the things that we identify as being wrong with male stereotypes are all things that diminish the value of traditional feminine qualities. So if a man is emotional, or if a man likes to talk about his feelings, things like that, those are viewed less manly. And so they are feminist qualities that men inherently have are suppressed. And so that in turn devalues things that feminism are saying are valuable and important. I think there are a lot of different components to that, but I definitely think for most people, if you say that you're a feminist and you don't want to elicit that reaction, you need to have an asterisk and explain, you know, not that kind.
Yeah, I'll accept that criticism that we're viewed as man-haters and viewed as...
No, I accept that. And that's like, I think what that guy was trying to say is he's like, no, we're great friends. You're nice to men. I mean, I've caught myself in the trap. Not that, like, I mean, I am, like, fully on board. I mean, I'm quite open about it. But it's more the fear of someone else's persona of something they don't understand.
Right.
And you recognize that they don't fully understand something that I hold really close to me.
I do fall into the trap of feeling that antagonism, especially, like, early on when we started the podcast, we talked about a really heavy issue of sexual assault. When you study into that issue and just the ways our culture have conditioned people into feeling about that. I mean, you can't help but feel this kind of anger about the issue and that gets funneled towards men as a whole. But then you get caught into that same thing of labeling a whole gender based on the actions of a few. I see the validity in both sides and both reactions.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think feminism is just very misunderstood as to what it really means. Well, getting political, on the conservative side, feminism is viewed as this evil thing that's, you know, anti-men and, you know, very non-traditional and what have you. And then on the liberal side, feminism also has the other extreme view.
Mm-hmm.
especially in regards to issues like birth control and abortion and those really hot topics. And so you have these two extremes, and yeah. both camps seems vilified in whatever position they take. But I feel like on the podcast, we've tried our best to maintain a very moderate
yeah.
view.
Yeah. Maybe this is, I mean, this, I feel like a kind of a bold statement, but I feel like the only way for feminism to go away is for men to stop being afraid of the word. Because I don't think most men are afraid of the concept. Like, most men aren't afraid of gender equality. But
fear of a name implies fear of the thing itself, to quote one of the great men, Dumbledore.
Yes! Yes! Honestly, like, let's just, like, close up shop. Like, that's all we needed
to
say.
Technically, those words were written by a woman, but, I mean, that's neither here nor there.
That's neither here nor there. But yeah, exactly. Like, feminism, it's I feel like it's going to be hard for it to reach its full potential and for the movement to achieve all of its goals when half the population is a little trepidatious of just the word itself.
Right. Yeah. And I see the convenience factor in having a label. It's so much nicer to have a label to, like, so everybody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Except the problem is that
nobody can agree what that label actually
exactly.
means.
Yeah. Exactly. So
all it does really in this case is cut out the explanation of what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know if that means changing and finding a new label, although a lot of feminists disagree with. I mean, it's the name itself is very controversial
yeah.
and having a name and all of that. I truly believe that once explained, gender equality is something that the vast majority of people approve of and agree with.
Yeah. I was going to say, I remember in, you know, early adulthood, when I first came across the concept of feminism, I thought, just based on the name, I thought, well, that's awful. Mm-hmm. But then once I paid a little bit more attention, I thought, well, duh. Like, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah, like, why do we have to have a movement so that women and men are paid the same?
Yeah, why is there a title for this? This is just the state of being.
And that's another thing, is a lot of people, especially on the conservative side, feel like there isn't a need for it. And this was especially a criticism of the Women's March. Like, you have the right to vote. Like, you aren't oppressed. Why are you acting oppressed?
You can vote.
Why do you have this
victim
problems? This victim mentality that they say we have? And in reality, there are a lot of issues where there is sexism in the world and there is misogyny.
So I guess just to, like, encapsulate all we've been talking about and close out our podcast, our final question is, where would you say that men fit into the feminist movement?
There are two different directions I want to go. One is the more likely scenario, and one is what I think would be most helpful. So I think what would be most helpful is what we were talking about earlier, is the more men are okay with their identities kind of spilling over into different categories and okay with a variety of emotional weight placed on their decisions, and the more that they embrace traditionally viewed feminine qualities, then the easier it is to relate and to understand the connections between us.
I like that a lot.
And I think that it would inherently equalize the view if it's not equalized already.
I love that.
We'll just leave it at that.
No, I was like, I was going to add something, but I'm like, no, that was perfect.
We've found common ground. Look at us.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Yeah, that, like, the way for men to embrace feminism is the way to embrace themselves holistically,
yeah.
if that's what you're saying.
It is what I'm saying. And to be fair, I think it works the other way around, too. We both, men and women, have responsibilities to do that. And I need to view it as my responsibility to understand as much as I can about you, and vice versa. The problems, screaming to be heard and understood, is not effective, and it's solved by focusing on understanding.
I love that.
Yeah, that's a great way to end.
And thank you again for coming on our podcast today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And on our last episode, you've really been a favorite. So to wrap up, we just wanted to give kind of the rest of our schedule.
So this is episode 9, and as both me and Steph are making career moves and life moves, we're thinking of rounding out season 1 of Femboldened with episode 12. And so we'll be having a couple more topic-based podcasts, and then we'll do a final wrap-up where we return to all the things that we've talked about and see how our positions have changed and how we've changed. But we appreciate all of those who have listened and stuck with us.
And we'd love to hear your feedback, your comments. I love getting comments from people who listen to the podcast.
Yeah, or things you want us to talk about before we wrap it up.
Yeah, or even before season 2. There will be a lot more where that came from.
So I'll give you some feedback on this episode.
Tell us.
Okay, sounds good. I'll email you.
So again, thank you for listening. This is Femboldened.